Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
A WBEZ analysis finds that nearly half of Chicago renters are paying over 30% of their monthly income on housing and utilities. That can mean more debt, more evictions, and in some cases, people ending up homeless. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. The numbers don't lie, and neither does the pinch in our wallets. More Chicagoans are shelling out a larger percent of their monthly income to pay for housing. And this makes it hard for people to hang on to the homes that they're in, and even harder for people experiencing homelessness to get back on their feet. Now, in an attempt to work around city building regulations, one local group combating homelessness, that's the Orange Tent Project, it tried to build a temporary structure for a veteran and resident of the Dan Ryan homeless encampment. But it was shut down by the city. Now, in a few minutes, we'll hear more about the rising cost of housing from WBEZ's data projects editor, Alden Lowry. But first, we'll turn to Chicago Sun-Times reporter Sophie Sherry for more on who the Orange Tent Project is and why their structure was shut down. Here's Sophie.
So the Orange Tent Project is probably best known by Chicagoans for being the group that provides those bright orange ice fishing tents to individuals experiencing homelessness across the city. They began this effort a couple years ago, and just about a year and a half ago, the group started working with some students to design a more secure structure that they could maybe provide to some of those individuals. So they began work on this structure, again, with some design students at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Mm-hmm. And they landed on this 6 by 8 foot sort of wooden structure that resembles a tiny house in a way. And their intention was to build this first model for a individual who's been living at that encampment on the Dan Ryan. And they began that effort just earlier this month.
And I would imagine, Sophie, that any house, even a tiny one, would need some sort of green light from the city, right? They would need a building permit. So did the group have that?
Right. So this group did not get any permitting or go through any planning process with the Department of Buildings here in the city. When they were in the design process, their research indicated that if they built a structure to certain size and specifications, they wouldn't need that kind of permitting. So they built this structure to be under 400 square feet, less than 15 feet tall. It has no gas or electricity hookup. And they were under the impression that by following those rules, it wouldn't require permitting. And the goal of this all was just to get this structure built as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
The groups made it very clear they were in no way trying to, you know, skirt city rules or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, they say they meticulously, to your point, they adhere to every guideline mm-hmm. when it comes to this temporary shelter. So we did get in touch with Morgan McClucky, who's director of the Orange Tent Project. Now, they were not available to join today's conversation mm-hmm. with us, Sophie, but she did send over a statement about the tiny home. Now, in part, it reads, "While it's disheartening that we're compelled to dismantle a structure that could provide essential support, I believe that forging a collaborative path forward is in our collective best interest. Hence, I'm committed to revisiting our strategies and exploring alternative avenues to address the urgent needs of our neighbors, prioritizing solutions that are prompt, dignified, and above all, safe." Mm-hmm. So tell us more about who the structure was initially for. You mentioned that it was an individual that had been living at the encampment for some time.
Right. So Morgan tells me that this very first structure, tiny home, was intended to go to an 80-year-old veteran who'd been living at that Dan Ryan encampment for a couple of years now, named Smokey. And just a day before the group was set to begin construction earlier this month on the tiny home, Morgan said she learned that Smokey had died. Horrible, you know, tragic news for all. And the group had selected a new resident who'd also been at the encampment for a long time to take this first tiny home. It was very excited about that all. But yeah, just a really, you know, tough start to this all. Morgan, you know, tells me no one should have to die in a tent, especially someone who has served our country.
Yeah. And it is worth noting that the group's founder, Andy Robledo, who we've had here on Reset as well, he faced pushback early in this initiative. He came from the city when he first started distributing those orange tents around town. Remind us what ultimately changed the minds of city officials.
That's correct. So when Andy began this effort back in 2021, 2022, he was individually going around and distributing and purchasing these ice fishing tents for individuals around the city. He was just really frustrated with the growing numbers of homelessness and the long lists for individuals trying to get permanent housing. And in the winter of 2022, the city pushed back against this effort. They began placing, you know, similarly to what we've seen on this tiny home, sort of red alert removal. The city is going to remove these tents. And Andy was able to work collaboratively with the city and come to an agreement. Obviously, those tents still stand today. And at this point, they've built, I believe, 200 to 300 for individuals across the city. So Andy is no longer involved in the group in an official capacity, but Morgan is very optimistic that she can forge similar conversations with the city to find a way forward. The mayor didn't respond to direct questions about this tiny home structure, but did release a statement saying how the mayor believes housing is a human right here. So Morgan hopes to be able to work with the administration toward that shared goal.
Sophie Scher is a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Thank you so much for the update.
Thank you.
All right, sticking with the topic of affordable housing, there's a WBEZ analysis which found that rents are getting higher, and so people are forced to use up more of their income for housing. Alden Lowry is a WBEZ Data Projects editor who joins me now in studio. You've been digging into this topic, right, Alden?
Indeed, Sasha. Good to be with you. Was really kind of riffing off of a national study that was done earlier this year, talking about folks who are, and the term is cost burdened. And the, I guess the official definition of that is if you're spending 30% of your income, or if you're spending actually more than 30% of your income on rent and utilities.
Yeah.
If you're spending more than half, you're considered severely cost burdened. And so I was curious what those numbers look like in Chicago.
Yeah. So you make the point in a recent column that you wrote for the Sun-Times that there just isn't enough housing, right?
Yeah.
And that that's making the available housing pricier and pricier. Tell us more.
Sure, sure. So yeah, around this whole question of bring Chicago home, we, you know, money for the homeless. Mm-hmm. And so one of the questions I ask in the column is, you know, well, how did we get here? Why do we not have enough housing available for people? And we're seeing in a number of ways people who are who can't afford their own place, so they're doubling up, which is in the classic definition of the homeless. There's actually more people in that bucket than there are people who are living essentially on the street. They don't have a house over their head at all, as opposed to people who don't have a home of their own and are doubling up with someone else. So, in Chicago, we've got an increasing percentage of those folks. It's now 47%, or it was as of 2022, according to the data. Just as recently as 3 years before that, it was just below 42%.
Right.
So we've seen an increase, and part of that increase has also happened around the time that we've seen this increase in rents. Analysis that Amy Chen did for us back last year, looking at evictions, we were curious how were rents looking as the evictions were returning to pre-pandemic levels. And what we found was through Zillow data, essentially nationwide data based on their listings, Cook County, among the 10 largest counties in the country, had one of the, I won't say one of the highest increases, but it had a very dramatic
jump.
Over the last two and a half years or so, about 25% in terms of average rent in Cook County, just below $1,500 to just above
$1,800. Wow. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was on Zillow recently, Alden, doing a search for myself, right?
Yeah.
I'm currently a renter and just looking, I mean, all across the city, I couldn't believe the numbers I was seeing for the size of unit that I was looking for.
Yeah. So, and it's a problem that's happening across the country. There were even higher jumps in places like Orange County and in Miami-Dade County. So, so this is a predicament.
We're all feeling this pinch.
Yeah.
We're all feeling this pinch. Now, you were listening into my conversation a moment ago with Sun-Times reporter Sophie Scher about the city shutting down construction on that tiny home at the homeless encampment. And it's a question you just brought up a few moments ago. How did we get here? How did we get here? I know that this is something that you've looked into extensively over the last several years, but I'm just baffled at how we get to a point where folks are so in need of housing that some are taking matters into their own hands now and just trying to build tiny homes.
Yeah. I mean, we get reminders all the time, depending on where you are in the city. You've got people camped out underneath the expressway and so on and so forth. So there's a number of things happening, I would say, just in terms of our actual stock of housing, in terms of affordable housing, it's diminishing. Institute of Housing Studies at DePaul has made noise about this for quite some time. you know, maybe in the past decade, 12 years or so, we're just not seeing affordable housing being built at the same rate as we're seeing kind of the luxury, higher end things that are being built. Yeah. We're also demolishing affordable housing that's in lower income communities. Inglewood, West Inglewood are at the top of that list. Properties that were lost due to the foreclosure crisis, or they were just in disrepair and ultimately had to be torn down. Not enough being built to replenish those properties. And we're talking about in the hundreds in terms of their actual stock. And then we also have just the fact that there are some units that would have been kind of last resort housing, Chicago Housing Authority as an example. And, you know, the Housing Authority, the housing advocates will tell you, is no longer in the business of actually providing housing. Mm-hmm. They provide vouchers, but they're not really providing the actual stock itself. Yeah. And they've even been criticized for having some properties that are actually able to be rehabbed and potentially available for people who are in emergency housing situations. And the Housing Authority has refused to essentially bring those units online.
Interesting.
So
your team also, you analyzed census micro data, right? Because you were trying to learn even more about how cost burdened Chicago households are. I mean, tell us more about what you found when it comes to who is affected.
At the top of the list are it's people, as you might imagine, people who are in lower income households. And so the citywide median household income is roughly 72,000, just under 72,000. If we look at folks who are making less than half that, 35,000 or less, 88% of those folks are considered cost burden, and almost two-thirds of them are severely cost burden. So there's two out of every three of those households are spending more than half of their income on rent and utilities. And if you're doing that, then that means you've got less for childcare, you've got less for health care, you've got less for all of the other necessities that that households have.
Yeah.
So those would be the folks that I would say most impacted. And then, of course, you've got communities on the south and west sides, higher percentages of renters in those communities, Black and Latino neighborhoods primarily, who are also feeling this pinch.
Yeah. Well, the larger point you made earlier, Alden, is that this is reflective of a nationwide trend, right? So, I mean, what more would you say the city should be doing? You know, does something need to happen on the national level, you think? Maybe to reverse this kind of trend before it trickles down?
Well, indeed. And exactly what is a tough question. I think it really boils down to incentivizing builders to actually create more housing where potentially the profit on the price point is not very high necessarily, but there are other benefits or values that those builders might get that will make them want to build this kind of housing. And so maybe it's a perk for some of the sweeter things that they want to do.
Yeah.
But in order to provide this public good, there are other ideas out there in terms of rent control and others, and that's worked in some places. I think New York City's tried that. There have been a couple other places that have tried that. Chicago has tried it, but hasn't been able to kind of get it through.
Hasn't stuck just. Yeah. Yet.
And then also just kind of building housing where you can kind of get more bang for your buck. And so we've got a lot of people that are doubling up. And so perhaps multifamily housing that really is indeed for perhaps more than one family mm-hmm. might also be a way to think about it. Larger households. We've kind of actually gotten away from that. Some years ago, we were probably a half a point of a person more per household than we are today.
Oh, okay.
So that may be another idea to think about.
Interesting suggestion there. We'll leave it there. Alden Lowry is a WBEZ Data Projects Editor. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by Brenda Ruiz, and it was edited by Meha Ahmed. If you like this conversation, well, please consider leaving us a rating and subscribing. It helps listeners like you find our show. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you for listening. You can catch us on the show today at noon on 91.5 FM, WBEZ.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.